States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's episode, we begin a series of grooming tips with Dawn White O'Connor. But first, the USDF has announced the new L graduates and L graduates with distinction, who graduated from the New England Dressage Association's final exam, which was held September 19th through the 21st in Saugerties, New York. They are Linda Curry from Massachusetts, Valerie McCloskey from New York, Martina Mertens from Illinois, Heather Reynolds-Dostal from Massachusetts, Michelle Southwick from Vermont, Ashley Theodore from Massachusetts, Crystal Wilt from New York, and Sherry Wolke from Michigan. Marilyn Heath joins us now to explain the L program, which coincides with an article in the Connection magazine's October issue.
The United States Dressage Federation is an organization which is dedicated to education, and judges are not licensed by the United States Dressage Federation. But the L program is an educational program made up of 6 weekends that is a prerequisite to apply to be a judge to the United States Equestrian Federation. And there are several levels of judging within that organization. There is the small R, and people who hold a small R license are eligible to judge through second level. There's large R, and they can judge third and fourth level as well as the lower levels. And then there's S, which means senior judge. Has nothing to do with age, just with seniority. And senior judges can judge everything through Grand Prix at the national level. Then the FEI, which is the International Judge Organization, licenses judges as well. And they can be 1-star, 2-star, 3-star, 4-star, 5-star. according to their qualifications, they can judge at the international levels, but only a 5-star judge can judge at an Olympics or a World Championship or a World Cup.
Let's talk about the application then for those L program graduates to move up to the small R.
Well, the application is available on the United States Equestrian Federation website. And when a person has graduated from the L program with distinction and has the scores they need, they will send documentation of their L program results and their ride scores along with their application to the Licensed Officials Committee of the United States Equestrian Federation. On that application, one should list as many references as possible. In order to have an application considered by the Licensed Officials Committee, 15 forms, evaluation forms, have to be received by the Licensed Officials Committee before the Licensed Officials Committee can even begin to consider them. That means that if one sends out 15, and sends in 15 names, those, not everybody will fill out an application, or fill out an evaluation, excuse me. Therefore, it's important to send as many names as possible. 12 of those names must be from licensed dressage judges or members of the dressage or eventing technical delegates or committees. However, it's best not to use those people because they already automatically receive an evaluation form. So it's better to come up with other people. It's not an easy thing to do. And as people scribe as candidates, as L candidates scribe and sit with judges, they should talk to them at that time about hey, if I make it and if I ever apply to the small R, would you give me a recommendation? And then when the time comes to have to submit names for references, it's best to contact the people that you wish, whose names you wish to use, so that they remember you. And what I find the smartest ones do is they will refresh my memory as to where I met them, where I worked with them, and send a picture, so that then I say, oh yeah, I remember. You know, we have a lot of people sitting with us and a lot of people scribing for us, and 2 or 3 years down the road, it's not easy to remember everybody. So it's courteous and it's effective to really contact people and let them know who you are and ask permission to use their names.
Explain, Marilyn, the time frame for all this.
Well, I already commented that the L program should be no more than 5 years old, unless you're going to go back and audit, and then it can be 10 years old. My feeling is that if you have a very strong evaluation in your final exam from the L program and you have the scores, it's just better just to go ahead and do the small R and move along as quickly as possible. Once one receives the small R successfully, which is at least a year's program, and once a candidate has achieved the small R status, then it's another step of judging a certain amount of rides at second level test 3, a certain number of shows, and then another program to do the small R and additional scores through the pre-St. George. So it behooves one not to hang around and dawdle, so
right,
to speak.
But in terms of the program itself, there are two sections. I'm just curious about the time frame once you
About the L program or about the small R?
The small R program.
Oh, the small R program consists of two sections. One is educational, it's 4 days long, and the other one is a year later, which is the examination. And in between times, the apprentice work should be done. 25% of the apprentice judging can be done before the first training session, but it all must be completed by the second.
Continuing education is important, obviously. There's lots of things that you can do to help yourself along this process.
Absolutely. I would judge as many schooling shows as you have the opportunity to. Everything that you can do to continue your education, watching DVDs of rides, practice judging, practice judging at a show hopefully with a scribe that's going to go through the small R program with you. Record yourself judging and then play it back and listen to yourself judge. It's very revealing sometimes. You need to be responsible. One needs to be responsible for everything that was in the L program, only to a higher standard. So it's essential to know, for instance, the purpose of each level as stated on the top of each test of training through second level, the criteria of all the movements that were on the handouts of all of your program material in the B session, the components of the collective marks, know what order the collective marks come in, know the word description that goes with each score from 10 to 0, address the rider in your comments, not only in the rider section of the collectives, but also in the boxes through the test if the rider is the cause of performance faults. So just know that you are responsible for that L program material. And when one graduates from the L program, we hope that you will uphold the standards that have been taught to you when you go out and judge schooling shows. And by upholding those standards, then you'll be able to take that right on to the small art program. So practice makes perfect, they say, but perfect practice really makes perfect.
And I would imagine one of the important things to do is really log everything that you do in terms of these continuing education opportunities and the whole process, really.
Absolutely. From now until you get your five-star FEI card, keep track of everything. Study the judge's checklist. Study the USDF glossary. Go back to your recommended reading list in your L program handout material. It was the first thing in the A session. Read some of those books, and I'm sure you'll be successful in. So the best of luck to everybody.
All right. Very good advice, Marilyn. And again, this article will feature in the October issue of Connection Magazine. Marilyn, thank you so much for coming on the program and explaining it to us.
You're welcome.
And now for the start of a new series on grooming tips, which coincides with the October issue of USDF Connection Magazine's article, Secrets of Top Dressage Grooms. Dawn White O'Connor is groomed to Stefan and Shannon Peters in California, and she joins us now. Dawn, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You've been in the business so long, you must have so many tips you can offer. Where are we going to start?
I think with braiding, if that works.
Okay. Well, absolutely. It's something that almost everybody has to consider at some point, how to get the best out of their braiding.
Yeah, I think the biggest part of the braiding is the actual braid itself. Like, so many times, I think people don't spend as much time like separating the hair evenly and making the braid good, and just focus on how they roll it up or put it into a button braid. And I think the biggest part to make the braid look the best is that the hair is separated in even parts, and then that the braid, all the hair is in the braid, and that the braid is tight enough that when you go to roll it up, it doesn't just fall apart and look messy.
Right. So, of course, beginning at the poll and working your way down and measuring the length of the neck to make equal braids, of course, isn't it? That's where you need to start.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, depending on, some people like smaller braids, some people like bigger braids, regardless of your choice when you're doing the braids, just the biggest thing that you actually take a comb and separate the hair so it's a straight line, not just separate it into like random sections with the hair going in both ways, that you do it with a comb so it's in a straight line and it just looks neat, like even when you're sitting on the horse and then the braids are spaced evenly and there isn't hair sticking out in all directions.
Well, of course, each horse is different and depending on the thickness of the mane to start with, but do you go for an odd or an even number?
I don't usually count. I usually just kind of start with the top braid and just kind of make each braid down the same size. So I usually just measure it either with a comb or my fingers and then just go down the mane, separating it into the same sections. And then however it ends up on each horse, just leave it that way.
And of course, the major question here, are we talking about thread or rubber bands?
Both. Usually, I do rubber bands at the shows where we have more horses, just because they're much more efficient, and especially taking them out is much easier than with thread. The thread ones, I think, look better. They take so much more time. So if you have a lot of horses at a show, it's a bit tougher to do all of them with the thread. Both ways, like I start them with rubber bands. If I'm going to roll it up with rubber bands or thread, I braid it down and put a rubber band on the end and then go from there.
So you do a combination of both if you're using thread. Now, what about
Yep.
the downside of using rubber bands, Dawn?
I think since you have to put the rubber band around the outside of the braid, then it just, I mean, you can always see the rubber bands a little bit. With the thread, you can hide it so you don't really see any of it. And then with the rubber bands, I think a lot of times they get more of like a, I don't know how to describe it really, like a really round look instead of more like natural, just like the braid is sewn into the mane. And with the rubber band, it kind of pulls all the hair together and then you kind of see it around the shape of the rubber band.
And there's also the risk of actually pulling out hairs when you remove the rubber band, isn't there?
Yeah, the same. I think the thread too. I think sometimes with the thread, it pulls because you can sew it in pretty good, and sometimes that will pull the hair out too. So I think it kind of depends. I usually try to leave the horse's manes pretty thick just because then as you go through show season braiding them, they stay with enough hair that the braids look better. And I personally like how they look with thicker manes and you have the bigger round braids.
And how far in advance of the class do you braid, and how soon afterwards will you unbraid?
Well, it kind of depends on the horse. We have a few that roll every time you put them back in their stall, so we try to braid them right when we take them out, right before they go and show, so they don't go in the stall and roll and get shavings all in them. But I try to do the braids as close as possible to the class. Just so they always look the best when they're fresher, sometimes that doesn't work depending on your schedule. And then if there's no award ceremonies or anything, take the braids out right away. I think the more they stretch their neck down, eat in their stall and have the braids in, then the more hair gets pulled out.
Now, what about the forelock? Some people leave the forelock unbraided. What's your theory about that?
I usually braid it, but I think, it's kind of just a personal choice. Some horses look really nice with the forelock out. Most of ours, we usually braid them. I don't know. Personal preference, I guess.
And obviously clipping the bridle path is important, isn't it? And how far back you go there. What do you typically do, Dawn?
We have a lot of horses that we don't clip the bridle path on and just separate it. Obviously the forelock portion going forward and then the mane going down, and just kind of pull the mane that way so you can tell. If you do a bridle path, then, I do like a teeny tiny one, so it really is just the width of the bridle. Otherwise, I think when you clip it down too far on the neck, then a lot of times there's this giant gap between your first braid and the neck, and it kind of makes it look a bit funny. So either a really, really small bridle path or none at all.
Any advice about the size of those braids, though, depending on a horse's neck? If it's got a thin neck or a thick neck, it's very heavily set. What do you recommend?
I think it really just depends, on the horse. There's definitely some horses that really look better if they have smaller braids and some with bigger braids. I haven't found an exact method as to which are which. And I think a lot of it is rider preference. Some people like them to have really, really massive thick braids, and some people like more small braids. So I think it's just kind of playing around with your horse and seeing what you think looks best.
And how do you deal with those whisky bits when horses start to rub and it's almost a braid but not quite?
Like at the bottom of their neck?
Yes.
I usually do those with rubber bands, even if you're doing thread braids, and just put like a ton of quick braid on. And even if it's too short of hair to actually braid, just take a tiny little section of it and just twist it really good until it kind of winds itself up in a knot, and then just put a bunch of rubber bands. And up close, it doesn't look very good, but at least from a distance, you don't have hair sticking straight up.
And do you use any products on the mane before you braid?
Usually just quick braid or quick braid and water. Having a little quick braid in there definitely helps contain all the little wispy bits. And then some horses, if they rub more with the quick braid, if they get itchy, then I do it just with water.
All right, terrific. Well, some great advice there, Dawn. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the program.
Thank you for having me.
And again, articles relating to both of the topics on this week's show are in the October issue of Connection magazine. And don't forget to visit eTrack, the USDF's online learning center and resource for dressage and equine education, at usdf.org. The USDF is your connection to the American dressage community. This podcast is available for download from the iTunes podcast store to your smartphone podcast apps and MP3 players.